More than 100,000 people visit the American Players Theater in Spring Green every year. And we're going to talk about the upcoming season on the show today. I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. With me from APT are Brenda DeVita, the Artistic Director. Welcome back, Brenda.
Hi, thank you for having us.
You bet. And with her is Nate Berger, who is going to be playing Hamlet this season. Hi, Nate. Welcome.
Hi. How y'all doing?
We're doing great. Thanks for being with us, both of you. And do you guys have not my guests, but my audience, do you have a favorite memory of attending an American Players Theater production? I know I do. What would you like to know about how the theater operates? Well, join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Well, Brenda, you must be so excited for this season to open. Why don't you talk a little bit about what it was like for APT the last 2 years?
Wow, it was like a lot of things.
Yeah.
it was very heartening, ultimately very, very centering for us to like understand what the value of our work is to the community at large and for our artists. And I think it was very humbling, obviously, to have to work inside of the restraints, and it was scary at times, but I do think that ultimately the community that we've built both in and among the artists and craftsmen and staff and the community outside, the audience obviously, and the patrons and donors and board members, it feels like we are grateful, wholeheartedly grateful for having relationships that helped us focus ourselves and keep ourselves calm and focused and moving forward and problem solving. Like I have the best staff in the whole world. I cannot tell you how brilliant they are and be grateful enough for them. But it was about that, remembering why we're there, what we mean to the communities that we serve, and how to stay focused on maintaining it for the future.
Right. Sometimes it's nice to stop and just appreciate what you have, right?
Yes, it was very centering in that respect.
Now, Nate, how did the pandemic affect what you do as an actor?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think especially in terms of as a theater artist, it sort of halted all our progress for a little while. My wife, Laura, and I are both actors, and we live in Chicago. And we sort of had to revert to a way of living that we hadn't done in 10 years. So I picked up a bunch of little jobs and I drove delivery, and I worked for my sister-in-law's arts therapy organization and just sort of spread myself thin and found work wherever we could get it. My wife did some nannying but it really, I think, let me refocus on sort of the internal preparatory part of acting, though, which is just, for me, just consuming media, consuming literature, reading, and sort of thinking on that, just finding whatever is useful wherever you can find it.
Wonderful. Well, like I think a lot of us, you know, it was a terrible thing, but there were some bright spots. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Brenda, you have 9 plays scheduled this year. What's the process like for selecting the plays for each season?
Gosh, I could spend a whole day talking to you about that. it's helpful that we have the repertory, the actual system by which we do our plays is very constricted in some ways and very freeing in others, and it is a scaffolding by which we understand what is necessary for a full season to have opportunities for us to grow and for us to maintain and actually understand the strengths that we have in the season, like what we're really specifically good at. So it's always focused around the great stories, great words, great artists. Literally, we reread hundreds of plays, we talk about hundreds of artists, and we always center the beginning of our planning around Shakespeare. So we know ahead of time what the Shakespeare plays are going to be. We know we have this great, and I wish the rest of the country had companies of actors, because we have start with the words and the actors always, and try to make sure that we have as much faith and trust in the play and the actors that we're putting in the middle of those plays to make sure they can succeed and feel like they're stretching and growing. So it starts a lot with the specifics that we know, which is Shakespeare's plays and the actors. And then rounding out the season is always important as we look forward to make sure that we're looking for new and exciting poets, dramatists that are writing in the vein of the kind of depth and breadth of ideas that we are interested in, why we think plays are great or will sustain over time and become like touchstones in the future. So we look for those plays and we make sure that we have a balance and an offering that is deep and wide, but always focused on the idea that the best couple, two words next to each other in the right sentence at the right moment with the right rhythms can do other things than just tell a story. They can move us and they can transform us. And so those are kind of the guiding principles, but it's a lot of nuts and bolts once we have a structure and the size of our company, and then casting across 9 plays with this company. It's an amazing matrix of conversation and compromise and excitement and risk and solidly knowing things that we know are true and good and right and will work. So it's an ongoing thing. We are starting right now to look at 2024. So that's how much in advance we work.
Yeah, I kind of figured that was the case because, like you said, lots of nuts and bolts moving around there. And who, when you say we, who is the core group who makes those selections?
Well, the core group that makes those selections are the artistic team, which comprises of myself and Carrie Cannon, my associate artistic director, Jake Penner, our artistic associate, Evelyn Matten, who is an artistic associate, who helps us a lot with what is possible, which in a repetition, like she's like the purveyor of reality kind of at times, which is incredibly helpful.
Yes.
And then Jimmy DeVita is our dramaturg. And we also solicit ideas from every great actor and many of the core company who contribute to the ideas about what we want to do and what could we do. What are they interested in doing?
Now, for some people, repertory may maybe have heard it, but not exactly sure what that means. Can you kind of tell us what that means, Nate?
Yeah, so repertory theater means that we do essentially 8 plays all at the same time. By the time we get to mid-August, all 8 plays, 5 up the hill outside and 3 inside, are running at the same time. And most actors in our company are working on either 2 or 3 plays at that time. So right now I'm in rehearsal for Hamlet. And usually in a regular season, I'm also in a rehearsal for another play. But because Hamlet is in 95% of the play, I can't be called for anything else. And then once this opens in the beginning of July, we'll have about 2 days off. And then I'll go into rehearsal for Love's Labor's Lost, directed by Brenda. And then once we get to middle of August, all 8 of our shows will be open and available for people to see, and we'll be running them on concurrent nights. So it ends up being the hardest schedule as an actor you have in the first half of the season, and then the easiest because you're not running 8 shows of the same show every week.
Right.
You get to switch it up, and then you have nights off, and it's sort of wonderful, and you get the payoff for all that insanity in the beginning.
Insanity, for sure. So do you ever get to a point where you almost say the wrong, you know, word in the wrong place because you're thinking you're in another play?
I don't usually, but in the past, we have often done this thing where Brenda will program plays that have a lot of overlap. Like, for instance, in 2014, we did The Importance of Being Earnest and Travesties at the same time by Tom Stoppard. And Travesties contains, as part of its action, pieces of The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde. And so when we were running that, I was only in Travesties, but Marcus, who was in both plays, and Christina Panfilio and Matt Schwader and Kelsey Brennan, who were in both plays, would often be like, wait, hold on, stop, in rehearsal and be like, which version of these lines is this? So you get acclimated, but it requires a great deal of compartmentalization.
And concentration, I'm yes, sure.
Yeah.
I do hear at the end of the season sometimes where an actor, actress has gone in and put on the wrong costume on the wrong night. And
oh.
Comes in and be like, no, not that one.
Yep, that's probably Colleen.
Oh, my gosh.
I said that was probably Colleen.
Thank goodness for the backstage help, right? What would you do without them? Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They don't get the accolades, but oh, my gosh. So important. So,
yeah.
So Brenda, we've kind of, you know, teased our audience a little bit about the plays. Why don't you tell us what they are? I don't think you need to go into all of the detail, but just kind of go over what's going to be on the Hill Theater this year.
Oh, yes. I think the Hill Theater is a great array of stories and styles, which is really exciting. And at the center of it, great cast. Every time I walk into a room, I'm like, wait, this is a great cast. So The Rivals, we start out with The Rivals, which is by Sheridan, which is normally set in the 18th century. And it's actually going to be sent in, it's going to be set in the 1920s, the actual costume.
Oh, wow.
It's exciting because
yes.
Just watching Kelsey Brennan take on Lydia Languish in the 20s is a very, very muscular and beautiful and funny version of that person. So it's hilarious. It's exciting. And I can't go in there too often because I feel like I'm not actually doing my job because it's too much. I go in to watch and I'm like, wait, I just got to go back and work on my job. Then we're doing Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility. It's by Jessica Swale. It's an adaptation by Jessica Swale. It's pretty cinematic and it's kind of sweeping movement between, because to take a novel and put it on play on the stage requires an approach that can help us move from place to place. It's a beautiful play. It's much funnier than I thought it was. When we read it in the first read, I was absolutely thrilled at how much humor and deep, deep affection and love the family, the sisters and the mother have for each other and their plight. And
oh, yes. One of my favorites.
Oh, good. Oh,
yeah,
good.
I'll be there.
Bring a whole bunch of women. They seem to be the people who want to see it the most.
Okay.
Of course, we're doing Hamlet with Nate playing Hamlet, and Jim DeVito is directing that piece and adapted, well, cut it. I don't know that he's adapted. I should have Nate.
He didn't adapt it. He just cut it.
Out of it, right? It's a 4.5-hour play without cut, so it is appropriate for cutting, but it shapes the play, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you go to cut, you have to decide things and what you are actually trying to evoke from, you know, and thought of the play. So I think it's a gorgeous cast, a gorgeous cast. And Nate is, I can say this publicly, Nate is a transparent, brilliant, alive, full of curiosity on stage, and his characters are always interesting and always bring you into the mindset, and to have him playing Hamlet is just a gift to all of us, and he's working hard on it, but he has a great crew around him. He'll let him talk more, but and then Raisin in the Sun, which is a play that is personally one of my favorite all-time American dramas, and it's got a beautiful cast, and we have a new director, Tasia Jones, taking that play on. Gavin is in it. Gina Daniels, who was with us last year. Elise Dickerson's in it. Chike Johnson's back. It's a fantastic. Russell Holt's back. It's a great, beautiful, and funny. Has a lot more humor in it. Again, there's no great play that's about tragedy that isn't full of human beings who are alive, and of course, they're trying to find joy and happiness in every instance most of the time. So. And then last but not least, we're doing another Shakespeare, which is Love's Never Lost, which I'll be directing. And actually, I'm just going to be moving great actors around as they figure out how to do the play. So my approach to that.
The key is getting those great actors, right, to make your job as director better or easier.
It's the only, honestly, I wish I could tell every young director, you know, concept, whatever you want to say about the play, it's 90% about the casting. I mean, that they can get on board with your ideas, yes, but that they can do and illuminate things you can never imagine as a director. It's the best thing.
Yeah, absolutely. As directing a few plays myself, I agree 100%. We're talking about the upcoming season at American Players Theater. What do you like seeing? Why do you like seeing plays there? What would you like to know about what goes on behind the scenes? Join in by calling 800-642-1234. Our on-air producer today is Clara Neipert, and Lee Rayburn is our technical director. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Make sure you stay with us after 11:45. We're going to talk about public art in Wisconsin. But right now we are talking about the APT Theater over in Spring Green. And we did just cover the shows that are going to be at the Hill Theater. But you also have a second theater, the Touchtown Theater. What are the differences between the two who've never been there?
Well, one, you are inside in air conditioning and there's no rain.
And no mosquitoes.
And no bats.
Yep, so there's that. You also die. I mean, there's nothing like the stars above the Hill Theater or anything about the Hill Theater that's glorious. But it's a very different experience in the sense that it is, we always had a dream that you could take what those guys are able to do, those great actors like Nate and the core company, a lot of the people that work with us, they do up the Hill at such a, to be true and be large in your choices in a world where we all want to be able to watch things on our iPhone is a very different challenge for those actors. And we were very intrigued by what we knew the actors were able to do if they could do that, what it would be like to be able to see them close up and actually tackling poetry intimately and without the extra challenge of the size and scope of the delivery and the voice and the physical. It's like being an Olympian up there on the Hill. And inside, it allows us to kind of microscope some things and telescope down on some real, like, I don't know, I hate the word real, more real. It's not more real. It's just more intimate. And you have more opportunities to actually see it in their eyes and be in their proximity. So that was the impetus for it, was to be able to take some plays that we knew didn't have, they were better inside. Lots of plays are better with, especially contemporary work, with the idea that lighting and sound is going to be imperative for their storytelling. And up the Hill, you don't have lights until 9 o'clock most nights. So you open Hamlet with guys saying, who is that? Who's there? And it's daylight. And that's the reality outdoor. But you put something, you know, you put something inside that belongs inside very small, intimate scenes or very small ideas that require a kind of intensity. It's just simpler to do inside. It also allows us to risk some things when we're not trying, honestly, to sell 1,000 seats a night. It's a difficult and challenging a pressure on a piece that is going to be on the hill that's going to require it to have a large audience. And you don't want to see a big play like Rivals with 200 people in the seats. You want to see it with 800 or 900 or 1,000 some nights we have coming this summer. That's a different experience. But inside, it allows, I think, for more intimacy. The dark also allows the audience to have a more private experience in some respects. And like I said, the plays can test out and test our guts on some of these plays and say, is this a great play? Are these great words? And not put that pressure on those plays to have to be popular in any of the traditional ways.
And that theater holds, what is it, 200?
Yes, 200.
Okay. So it's definitely intimate, and every little subtlety you can certainly pick up on. So that must be fun for the actors, too. Nate, are you doing any of the shows in the Touchtone?
In the fall, we do our ninth play, which we call The Shoulder Season. Marcus Trushinsky and I are doing a play called Stones in His Pockets, which is a two-hander about two guys in Ireland who are extras on a film set, and sort of the tension between their rural life and this imposing Hollywood life that comes into their community. So it's a play about community. So I'm really excited about it. When Brenda was talking about how they canvass the actors, Marcus and I pitched this play. So I'm really glad that we finally get to do it. We had it programmed in 2020, but COVID.
Yes. That's okay. Maybe it's yeah. now it's supposed to be done. It's now.
Yeah, exactly.
What are the other plays that you've got in there? Three others, right?
Oh, yeah. They're all, I mean, I'm so excited about every play this season because, you know, we've been waiting 3 years for some
right.
of these plays.
Yeah.
Back this season. But the first one out is River Bride, which is by Marisela Savino Orta. And it's a beautiful kind of poetic kind of fable about courage, I think, and what it requires of you to fall in love. And it is such an exquisite piece of language, but also full of 100% identifiable relationships between mothers and fathers and children as they are finding out what a complex family relationship will do to people who think they're falling in love and how important those families are. And the playwright calls it a grim Latino fairy tale. And I don't know that it's grim in the way that I think of grim. It feels like it's a romance that has some reality, real like challenges in it. But it's also very, very sweet and funny. And the family story of it is really, it's really heartbreakingly beautiful. And it's got an amazing cast. And Melissa Pereira, one of our core company member, and Trini Sandoval's back, and Eduardo. A lot of people are back, and some new people. So I'm excited about that. The other play is Brother Size that we've been waiting for 3 years to do. Gavin Lawrence, one of our core company members, is an incredible advocate for great writing and great writing by Black people and Black authors. And Terrell Alvin McCraney is one of his favorite writers, and certainly any of us that have experienced Terrell's work. He was the script writer for Moonlight, which won the Academy Award for Best Picture in 2017. And he's a brilliant poet, but mm-hmm. he is also, he digs in on human relationships and specifically Black love, which is something that among men and a lot, and identity between, and how we don't see a lot of that in the world. We do not see a lot of family relationships about love. And I think that it's a special, special piece of work. It's a special play. I don't know anybody has seen a production of it that hasn't been moved by it. It's a beautiful piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Moors is a piece that we are just dying to do. We did a reading of it. All three of these plays, we did readings in our Winter Words series where we read for the public, and you can buy tickets to that. I don't know if everybody knows about that, but you can buy tickets to listen to those plays. All three of these plays we read in the Winter Words series, and the last one was The Moors by Jen Silverman, who is an extraordinary young playwright with one of the most unique voices I have heard out there when I'm reading, just distinct and unique. And also takes on the most incongruent subject matters and kind of slams them together and somehow makes something new out of them. So in this, it's like all the allusions of the Bronte sisters, but with really contemporary language. It has very dark comedy and violence in it, alongside of some of the funniest things I have ever seen in a reading like that. So we were just on fire to get to do this piece. So there's hardly any tickets left to it. Oddly, the audience has really responded to this this confluence of genres in this play. They really are curious about it. So that's been exciting too.
That is exciting. I think I better order some very soon because I definitely want to see that. Those all sound wonderful. And speaking of tickets, how can people get tickets? And do you have any specials going on now for early bird kind of a thing?
Yeah, it's good that we're doing this today. Actually, it's so fortuitous because the ticket sale of 15% off the preseason discounts end tomorrow. So everybody's got to get online. You can always exchange tickets for other dates, but if you don't get in under the wire, that extension of that discount is not always there. So I just encourage people to go online at our website, AmericanPlayers.org, and buy some tickets. And like I said, we have the best exchange policy. It's easy. Like my box office staff. Yeah, keep pushing that, Brenda. Just keep pushing that.
Oh, that's wonderful. Because that can be a detriment for someone wanting to go to a play, not knowing if they're going to be available. And so that's great.
I mean, it's hard sometimes to get your groups together because it's a lot. one of the great things about APT is that it's a lot about gathering. And so people yes. use it as an opportunity to be with their friends and families and have a special evening. And so I think that getting tickets and changing them is part of our process at APT.
And eating outside, having a picnic or what have you is, you know, it's all part of the whole experience because it's so much fun to do that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. We did get an email. Well, it's actually a call from Sarah in Madison, and she couldn't stay with us. But Sarah's wondering if Laura Rook, who she believes is Nate's wife, will be in any plays this year. And also, she can't think of her favorite APT play because there are too many to count.
There you go. Yes, Laura Rook is my wife. I'm very proud of that fact. And she will be playing Eleanor Dashwood in our production of Sense and Sensibility, directed by Marty Lyons. And she's also assisting Brenda on Love's Labor's Lost.
Oh,
she's the assistant
wow.
director in that room.
Eleanor Dashwood, what a wonderful part.
Yeah, it's absurdly congruent with who she is.
Ah,
so.
Interesting. Interesting. I like
yeah.
that. So before, I mean, we're kind of running a little short of time here, but we got a little bit of time. But Nate, I really wanted you to talk a little bit about preparing to play Hamlet. That's such an iconic role. Is it a little intimidating? Is it something you've always wanted to do? Talk about that a little bit.
It's deeply intimidating. But, you know, there's all these books. I was talking to somebody about it yesterday. There's like a book called Modern Hamlets and Their Soliloquies, which actually includes a lot of text about Randall Duck Kim playing Hamlet, who was the founder of APT and the first Hamlet on our stage.
Oh, okay.
But it's one of these books that sort of has like, on this line, David Warner lifted his left hand to
oh my
heaven.
Gosh.
It is absurdly prescriptive, and I read it and was like, well, this wasn't helpful.
No.
But I think that's part of the problem is that there's just such a wealth of information out there because it is such an iconic role. And I think that the sort of weird part of that is that it's about you. It's about whoever is playing the role. And so some of it's useful, and I've sort of just had to consume it and forget it, I think, has been a large part of my process. And I have discovered more and more that the things that are most helpful to me are the accidents, and especially accidents of research, just peripheral things that I read. I've somehow magically been sort of dipping into all these books about losing your father, not on purpose. Like the last three books I've read, I was like, oh God, this is about that too. And about grief
mm-hmm.
and about the strange things that grief shifts in your internal chemistry and the personalization of it. So, it's been an interesting process in the preseason element of it. I haven't always wanted to play it. I actually really didn't want to play it for a long time because there's a lot of history behind it and because I think I just hadn't gotten comfortable with myself enough as a person, as an artist, to tackle it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel closer to being comfortable with myself as a person and artist. And so I'm really excited about it now, though.
So when you first got the role, and now you've been doing all this reading and thinking. Mm-hmm. Has your image or your thought process of the character of Hamlet changed? Do you look at him differently now than you did before?
I do. I mean, you know, the process changes everything, and the thing that changes everything the most is the other people that you come in contact with. So you can do all the planning you want about how you want to play this role or any role, and all of that's going to change once you butt up against real other humans, other artists, and the stuff that they bring. So I have the incredible joy of being able to play opposite Elise Dickerson and Trini Sandoval and Colleen Madden and Chike Johnson and Kelsey Brennan and Jamal James and a whole host of very, very talented artists who bring themselves in a really immediate, interesting way. And so whatever you think you know going into the room is going to go out the window immediately because you're confronted with someone's actual personhood, and then you have to change tactics. So I don't know as if I can give you a real concrete answer about, like, a large scope, what's changed for me, but it's really just been, like, I get to butt up against really interesting people, and that's changed everything.
Yeah, that's a great observation and part of the magic of theater for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Brenda, you know, this is an outdoor theater. Most of the time you're doing your outdoor stuff. What problems do you have that a lot of other, you know, theaters don't, besides, you know, the critters and the rain?
I think a big situation and one thing that's very challenging as we've joyfully and excitedly moved towards doing more contemporary poets and plays and stories is that we've also expanded the people of color in our company, and it's been extraordinarily beneficial to all the plays, not just the culturally specific plays, obviously, because if it's a real universal play, if the play is going to stack up and actually speak universally, it's not, can't be all the same, those of us that have been here for 25 years doing it the way we do. I mean, so that has been challenging in a way that it requires a lot of those folks to move to a very small town in Spring Green in rural America and work for, and you know, with a predominantly, at least in leadership, we're trying to change all of that as well so that it feels more universal as we, you know, thrive to be. So, but a predominantly white institution with a predominantly white audience. And I think that it's really been an education, an important, important part of our growth. It's to understand what the artists all need in order to fully be able to be in a room to do their work. And that requires an extraordinary amount of space and listening and understanding, like really understanding what's getting in the way or what can be hard. And I think that when we succeed, it is of another level of understanding why these plays are important and why the audience needs to hear and see and be a part of trying to bring the complexities and all the questions we have as human beings, understanding that we're all after a lot of the same things or fear the same things or are joyful about the same things. And that commonality, that kind of community that happens, that's a really important and big and lots of work on everyone's part to be generous and listening and curious and going after the story, because these are the artists in the room to meet this play at this time. And it's easier said than done, but it is essential. It is essentially the work. It's always been the work. It just now has a different kind of questions entering the room or conversations. It's great. I think the other thing is just, I think that actors that want to be in plays that have a kind of poetic nature to them, the language is more challenging for everybody. And I think actors are not encouraged necessarily to believe that there's need for that in the world, but that's certainly something we feel we need. Right. Is that? Do you want to speak to that at all, Nate?
About the challenge of poetry?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think that obstacles always make for creative solutions, right?
That's true.
The best thing about the hardness of this work is that you really have to ask more questions and you have to figure out more personalized and specific ways around that problem. And I think that once you are able to own poetic text in a way that is personalized and specific, it makes everything easier. It just opens doors in interesting ways. But that's a challenge that I think we're all always trying to get better at and learn more about, even the people who've been here for 30 years.
Yeah, that's why they're still here, honestly.
Yeah, it's because totally.
They step into a room and David Daniel's like, I don't know what I'm doing. And you're like, well, you've been in this play 13 times. What do you mean? But that beginner's mind, that kind of opened to like what you said, Nate, those actors step in the room opposite you and everything you thought you knew may be gone and may be different if you're listening. So yeah. To that person across from you. So I just find the work extremely important and an extremely an opportunity and a sanctuary to come out to APT. If you don't think you understand Shakespeare, come out and try to let us help, because we have some of the best practitioners and artists that are devoted themselves. And when we fail with you not understanding, like, you not understanding is our failure. And it's what we're after every day, is try to make sure that's on us. So I encourage everybody to come out, and especially to come see something they didn't think they wanted or could see or thought they would be interested in. I think those surprises, like Nate says, those unexpected things are where we grow. And that's the opportunity to go, oh, I never thought of that.
Right. I as someone who's sat in the audience quite a few times, and, you know, before I go, it's like, oh, God, Shakespeare, I really got to think. I got to really pay attention. And, you know, and like 5 minutes into it, I know exactly what's going on. And the actors do such an amazing job to make it so accessible to everyone in the audience. And you can tell everybody understands exactly what's going on by their reaction. You feel that way,
right,
Nate?
Yeah, we have the most amazing we have the most amazing audience that I know of and that I've ever played for. And I think part of that is the setting, too. Like, there's no distraction here. You're asked to lean forward and engage, and that's what you do because you're in the middle of nowhere at the top of a hill. But I feel like everyone comes in hungry, and that makes our job feel useful.
Oh, it is so much. Yeah, it is necessary. And sometimes people dismiss the arts, and they shouldn't, because it makes a big difference in all of our lives. So on that up note, I want to thank you both. And Brenda, one more time, how can people get those tickets?
Please, please, please go to our website, AmericanPlayers.org. Or call our box office, which I'm sorry, I don't have the number, but it's on our website.
608-588-2361.
Woohoo!
Thank you, Nate, with your photographic memory. I love you. I've only worked there for 30 years. Still don't know the
Thank goodness you're an actor with that memory. My goodness, that's impressive. Well, thank you again, both of you, and break a leg this season.
Thank you,
Jill. Thank you for your support. And please, if you are out, let us know. We'd love to say hi. I'm sure Nate would like to shake your hand to hello.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I will take you up on that. Thanks so much.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
We've been talking about the upcoming season at American Players Theater. What do you like about... I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong thing. That's what we've been talking about. We've been talking with Brenda DeVita, the artistic director of the American Players Theater in Spring Green, and Nate Berger is a member of APT's core company. Stay with us on the Ideas Network, because we'll be right back to talk about public art.